This is Morning Edition on Vermont Public Radio. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Good morning. Now, if you use the internet or carry a smartphone, and let's face it, that's almost everyone who's not off the grid, you probably already know that companies are tracking your movements, making note of where you shop, which apps you use, and where you like to travel. Companies are gathering as much data as they can, in large part to come up with more effective ads to sell us more stuff, or in the case of the government, to track suspicious activity. In today's world, even your television can track your viewing behavior and send personalized ads to your mobile phone, but at least one local library has been fighting back and taking a stand for personal privacy. The Kilton Library in Lebanon, New Hampshire, is making private, anonymous internet browsing software available for their users. The decision comes even after the Department of Homeland Security alerted New Hampshire authorities to the library's actions. Julia Angwin is a senior reporter for ProPublica, where she writes about privacy issues, and she joins us now on the line to talk about this. And Julia, thanks for speaking with us.
Well, it's great to be here.
Now, first, can you explain for our listeners what private browsing is, just how anonymous and untraceable it is compared with the type of normal web browsing most of us do every day?
First of all, it's important to make the distinction that there's something on your web browser that says that it's private browsing mode, and that is not private. So in case you were fooled by that, that is not really a way to avoid being tracked. That's a way to avoid your spouse who shares your computer later seeing what websites you went to.
Oh, like a search history thing.
Yes. It pretty much just erases the tracks after the fact only on the local computer. But all the websites you went to already know you were there and have ways of identifying you. The private browsing that I was referring to here with this is something called Tor. And it's a web browser that you download that's separate than the normal web browser you use. And that routes your traffic, kind of bounces it around to a bunch of locations before it gets to the website you're visiting. That way, they don't know where you are. Because one of the things that people don't realize is when you visit a website, they usually get what's known as your IP address, which is actually the address on the internet where your computer is connected. And that's often very locatable, almost exactly to your home or wherever it is you're sitting. So by routing your traffic around, it looks like you're sitting somewhere other than where you are.
Julia, is this Tor that you're talking about, is that the same as something I've heard called the deep web or the dark web? Is that the same thing?
Yes. Tor is how you get to the so-called dark web. Tor is basically a network of computers that are, like, share routing. And so one way you can get to hidden websites is also by using this shared network. It's like an anonymity network is essentially what you won't call it. Those are websites you can't Google for them. You have to know the address already. And you type it in, and if you're coming through Tor, you can get to it.
Now, Lebanon, New Hampshire is a small town, but the library's actions even drew the notice of one Edward Snowden, who recently tweeted his support of this tiny public library. Is it because the Kilton Library is the only one in the U.S. to make some form of this private browsing software available to the public, or are there other public libraries that have followed suit?
When I first wrote about the Kilton Library in September, they were the first one to say that they were going to install what's known as a Tor node in their library, meaning they were going to join this anonymity network that Tor runs so that people who need to bounce their traffic around can bounce it through that library. Then there was all this controversy about it. But since then, actually, many libraries have said they're going to do the same. So I think there may be kind of a mini movement going on where libraries are now going to start supporting this network.
Well, I mentioned in the lead that the Department of Homeland Security alerted New Hampshire authorities about what was going on in the Lebanon Library. Were they implying or going further about the library being in violation of any laws in doing this? Were they?
No, what happened was the Department of Homeland Security, an agent there, saw some news coverage about this library and reached out to the local police. It prompted them to show up at the library and say, you know, we really have concerns about you contributing to what can be used as a criminal network. And so the mayor and the city manager and all these people got involved, and there was a public meeting, which is one of those great things about New Hampshire and New England in general, is that these things are decided in these town meetings. So the police made their case, and the rest of the community actually ended up standing up and saying, you know what, there are a lot of people who need anonymity on the internet, dissidents, journalists, people who are concerned about any number of different threats to free speech, and we want to support it.
Let's take a look at it, though, from perhaps the government's point of view. I mean, you said that there is the potential here for criminals using these services. There's the example of the infamous Silk Road that was an online drug sales network, and they operated out of the Glen Park Library in San Francisco. It is much harder to monitor online behavior made private than, say, records of someone checking out a bunch of books on how to make bombs or something.
You know, that's an interesting comparison that you make, actually, because during the Cold War, one thing that the FBI did was they actually went to libraries and said, I want you to report on all Russians who are checking out books about bomb making, for instance. So there was actually an exact scenario which you're describing. And you know what happened in this country is actually all 50 states passed laws protecting the confidentiality of library records. It's easier to monitor online behavior than to get someone's library circulation records, because we as a society decided that although, yes, it might be true that people were going into the libraries and getting subversive books, we are really in favor of freedom of speech and freedom of thought, right? The idea that you can just check out anything, the most subversive thing ever, but it doesn't mean you're actually a criminal. It means you're exploring those ideas.
And that's a really interesting comparison, because you talk about the 1950s, and of course there was so much paranoia in the country, McCarthyism, and there were so many folks who got put on blacklists and stuff. But do you think that in this day and age, people are more willing to take, let's say, what the government might say, which is, well, you know, I know companies are tracking me online, but the government's looking out for my best interests, terrorists are everywhere, I'm willing to give up a little bit of my personal privacy?
But the problem with that debate right now is that the government first did it in secret without asking for like a decade. And now they're saying retroactively, like, hey, we were doing this on your behalf. And, you know, I think it's just the right of us as citizens to say, look, you know, this feels a little bit bad faith, right? We didn't know about it. Now you're saying it's totally cool and it's kept you safe all this time. And as people who pay the salaries for the burgeoning intelligence industry, which, by the way, before 9/11 was $20 billion we spent, and now we spend about $80 billion. So, you know, they've had a really good ride with our tax dollars, and maybe they have a really good argument as to why they had to invade all our privacy to keep us safe. But I think that we have a right to ask them to be accountable for that. And the truth is, right now, every terrorist attack that has happened, thank God there haven't been very successful ones, but Boston bomber, the underwear bomber, those guys were in their sights, right? They had information about those people that they failed to act on. So we haven't seen actually a situation where there was a terrorist attack that they didn't have information about.
Julia Angwin is a senior reporter for ProPublica. Thank you so much for taking the time.
It was great.